Hello, I'm Maria Titizian.
And I'm Rubina Margosyan, and this is The Week in Review.
Every week, we bring you the stories shaping Armenia and the region.
From politics and policy to social issues and conflict, we break down the news and what it means for you.
This week in the news, EU unveils €270 million resilience and growth plan for Armenia. Parliament passes amendments that could pave the way for nationalization of electric networks of Armenia. Dashir Group calls it politically motivated expropriation and warns Armenia could face international arbitration. These stories and more in our weekly roundup of the news.
The European Union will provide Armenia with a €270 million resilience and growth plan covering 2024-2027 to support economic development, connectivity, and reforms. EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Kaya Kallas, announced during a two-day visit to Armenia earlier this week. The visit also marked a significant step forward in Armenia-EU relations, with the two sides concluding negotiations on a new partnership agenda and agreeing to deepen cooperation in security and defense, including Armenia's participation in EU crisis management operations. Foreign Minister Arat Mirzoyan and Kallas held a joint press conference where they emphasized the unprecedented depth of Armenia-EU ties. Mirzoyan described the crisis management agreement as a sign of Armenia's commitment to global peace and more robust EU partnership. The two sides also launched joint consultations on security and defense policy. Mirzoyan called this a decisive step in aligning cooperation with evolving challenges and increasing joint efforts to address them. The new partnership agenda aims to strengthen Armenia's resilience, sovereignty, and sustainable development. It identifies specific areas of collaboration, including democracy, human rights, good governance, mobility, economic resilience, foreign policy, and people-to-people exchanges. Once finalized through internal procedures in both Armenia and the EU, it will serve as a roadmap for future cooperation. To complement these priorities, Kallas also announced that the EU will allocate substantial funding to support Armenia's independent media in combating disinformation, foreign interference, and hybrid threats. On the question of visa liberalization, Kallas said the European Commission has adopted the action plan, noting that once Armenia fulfills all necessary conditions, the process will further deepen ties with Europe. Addressing reports that Hungary is blocking a second round of European peace facility funding for Armenia, Kallas acknowledged the difficulty of reaching a unanimous agreement among 27 member states, but described it as an ongoing process, with the EU working to resolve the issue.
Well, Russia, on the other hand, is preparing an official letter to Armenia expressing concerns that Yerevan's increasing alignment with the European Union may contradict the rules of the Moscow-led Eurasian Economic Union, the EAEU. This was announced by Deputy Prime Minister Alexei Overchuk. Overchuk warned that the EAEU will consider measures to prevent goods that do not meet the Union's standards from entering its market as a result of Armenia's closer ties with the EU. He did not elaborate on what those measures might entail. Well, on the other hand, Armenia temporarily banned the import of a specific type of Russian ice cream due to what they said was food safety concerns. This went into effect on July 2. According to the Food Safety Inspectorate, a batch of the ice cream manufactured on March 7 was found to contain coliform bacteria and did not meet the technical regulations of the Eurasian Customs Union. Armenian authorities ordered the contaminated batch to be withdrawn from the market and destroyed or otherwise disposed of the rest of them. In response, Russia's Consumer Protection Agency requested clarification from Armenian authorities, including the results of the lab testing. The Russian side maintains that no violations were found during routine inspections and suggested that the issue may have stemmed from improper transportation or storage. Last month, Russia banned the import of fresh flowers from Armenia. Bans on Armenian imports imposed by Russia are a recurring pattern, often seen during periods of political friction between Yerevan and Moscow.
I wonder if there's going to be a new term regarding this banning regulations,
mutual banning
of products. Well, this week, Armenia's parliament passed legislative amendments enabling the possibility of nationalization of the electrical networks of Armenia. This was a move drafted and backed solely by the civil contract party. The changes grant the Public Service Regulatory Commission the authority to initiate proceedings against energy operators for violations, including those committed prior to the law's enactment. The regulator may now alter management structures or trigger nationalization to protect consumers. The legislation passed its second reading and final approval just 2 days after being cleared by the Standing Committee and the first reading. The temporary administration is expected to be appointed by the Public Utilities Regulator. The opposition sharply criticized the move. Artsvik Minasyan of the Armenian Revolutionary Federation and Armenia Alliance denounced the amendments as unconstitutional and in violation of international law. Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan had signaled the state's intention last week, stating during a cabinet meeting that the government must very quickly assume the management of Armenia's electrical network and proceed towards nationalization. In response, the Tashir Group, owned by businessman Samvel Garabetyan, notified Armenian authorities on June 30 of an investment dispute. The notice, filed under a 1995 Armenia-Cyprus Investment Protection Agreement, alleges unfair treatment and protection failures by state officials, describing the government's actions as politically motivated expropriation. The group warned that if violations persist, Armenia could face international arbitration and be required to provide full compensation. Separately, the investigative committee this week conducted searches of Tashir Group's offices. Authorities stated the operation is unrelated to Garabetyan's ongoing case concerning alleged calls to overthrow the government. Instead, it is reportedly linked to a separate money laundering investigation. Garabetyan's legal team confirms that computers and documents were seized during the search. Four individuals have been detained on charges of large-scale money laundering. The legal team also revealed that several criminal investigations into the Tashir Group had already been launched prior to recent developments, one in 2023, another in 2024, and one more in 2025.
David Ghazinyan, acting director general of Electric Networks Armenia, has pushed back against suggestions that the company's operations have deteriorated to the point that the state needs to intervene. He noted that neither the authorities nor the Public Services Regulatory Commission have raised such concerns in recent years. However, public frustration, and we have experienced this ourselves, over frequent blackouts has been mounting. In the context of recent developments involving Samvel Garabedian, Prime Minister Pashinyan has also begun publicly addressing the issue. However, Ghazinyan emphasized that even amid talks of nationalization, no government representatives have approached the company to discuss any specific problems. Well, they can talk to us and we'll tell them. In response to growing scrutiny, Electric Network Armenia has announced a new policy moving forward. In the event of a power outage, the company will clearly identify whether the issue falls under its own responsibility or that of another operator, such as the state-owned High Voltage Electric Networks, which operates under the Ministry of Territorial Administration and Infrastructure.
Over the weekend, Archbishop Mikhail Acabahyan was detained on charges of plotting a coup. According to the prosecution, on June 21, Acabahyan reiterated his 2024 calls for a coup. Law enforcement officers had entered the Catholicosate late Friday to arrest him, but they were obstructed by a group of clergy and citizens. The National Security Service later stated that in order to avoid escalation, its officers had withdrawn from the Holy See. A few hours later, Acabahyan voluntarily appeared before the investigative committee. Oleg's story here is much longer. He had agreed to go with the law enforcement. Then there were a group of people who
didn't allow him,
and he retreated into Echmiadzin, the premises. Mm-hmm. They were outside with the Catholicos.
And then he decided he's going to walk to Yerevan, and then halfway they picked him up
in a car, yeah. And mm-hmm. he did go to the law enforcement. Well, according to his legal team, Archbishop Acabahyan is being held in the same cell as Archbishop Bagrat Galestanyan. Earlier in the week, the penitentiary service denied media reports claiming that the health condition of one of the clergymen had deteriorated. And this is a weird sentence to say, but we know from practice that anyone who's detained
ends up getting sick.
Yes, and they always end up
in a hospital. Well, meanwhile, Archbishop Galestanyan, and just again for our listeners, he was also detained on charges of attempting to overthrow the government. So he has released a letter from jail where he is being held in pretrial detention for 2 months. In the letter, he reiterates his lawyer's earlier claims that the recordings set to implicate him and his supporters in plotting a coup are doctored. The National Security Service issued a statement confirming that the recordings were neither tampered with nor generated using artificial intelligence. Archbishop Galistanyan goes on to say that if he and his supporters are considered terrorists and criminals, then by that logic, it was terrorists and criminals who seized power in Armenia back in 2018, he's referring to the Velvet Revolution. Galistanyan also stressed that he does not regret his actions, not even for a minute.
Foreign Minister Atmirzoyan has pushed back against recent remarks made by his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, regarding tensions between the Armenian government and the church. Lavrov had expressed what he called serious concerns about everything happening in the Republic of Armenia. While acknowledging that the issue is clearly an internal matter for Armenia, he went on to say that attacks on the Armenian Apostolic Church deeply concerned Moscow. He noted that the church has traditionally always been one of the main pillars of Armenian society, adding that Russia would very much like to see that the church does not become the target of unfounded attacks. Responding to his remarks, Mirzoyan said that Lavrov's information is both incorrect and incomplete. He clarified there is no campaign by the Armenian authorities against the church. Rather, the issue involves certain clergymen who have sought to interfere in Armenia's political processes by attempting to initiate a coup. Mirzoyan emphasized that this is a legal matter and an internal affair of Armenia. He added that Lavrov would be well advised not to interfere in Armenia's domestic politics. The foreign minister extended the same message to Russia's lawmakers and members of media, stating that officials, parliamentarians, and commentators from Russia should show due respect for Armenia's sovereignty and refrain from interfering in its internal affairs.
Armenia's foreign ministry announced this week that Yerevan has expressed desire to become a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. This is a Beijing-led regional bloc focused on security, political, and economic cooperation. Its members include Russia, several Eurasian states, including India, Iran, Pakistan, and Kazakhstan. Armenia is currently a dialogue partner within the SCO, a status it achieved officially in 2016. Last week, Armenia's foreign minister, Mirzoyan, traveled to Beijing to meet with his Chinese counterpart. There, he also met with the Secretary General of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. In an interview with the Hong Kong-based newspaper, Mirzoyan said that Yerevan seeks to level up the strategic nature of relations with Beijing. He added that there is openness and readiness to deepen relations without any limitations. Yerevan recently signed formal strategic partnership documents with neighboring Georgia, the United States, and the Netherlands. There are ongoing talks to formalize Yerevan's strategic ties with neighboring Iran and France. Armenian officials have described ties with India, Greece, and Kazakhstan as strategic, though these have not been formalized so far. If Yerevan does sign a strategic partnership agreement with Beijing, it will be the last of the three states of the South Caucasus to do so. Georgia signed one in August of 2023, Azerbaijan a year later in July 2024. Azerbaijani President Aliyev traveled to Beijing this April to elevate ties to what they called a comprehensive strategic partnership with the Chinese leader.
And this week, Defense Minister Suren Papikyan met with the ambassador of France and India, two countries that have emerged as key defense partners for Armenia in recent years. Their discussions focused on defense cooperation as well as regional and international security matters. Meanwhile, Foreign Minister Arat Mirzoyan held phone calls with his Canadian and Iranian counterparts. Speaking with Canada's newly appointed foreign minister, Mirzoyan expressed appreciation for Ottawa's continued support for Armenia's democracy, political independence, and economic development. The two also discussed the humanitarian assistance provided by the Armenian government in facilitating the evacuation of third country nationals, including Canadian citizens, through Armenian territory amid the escalation escalation of the Iran-Israel conflict. In his call with his Iranian counterpart, Mirzoyan discussed recent regional developments and expressed hope that the established ceasefire between Israel and Iran would hold, creating a real opportunity for negotiations. The two also spoke about cooperation between Yerevan and Tehran during times of crisis.
Well, relations between Russia and Azerbaijan have grown increasingly tense this week. The situation escalated after two Azerbaijani nationals were killed by Russian law enforcement during mass arrests in Yekaterinburg, linked to unsolved murders. In response, Azerbaijan arrested at least 10 Russian nationals. Among those detained in Baku were the editor-in-chief and deputy editor of Sputnik Azerbaijan, the local branch of the Russian state-funded news agency. Soon after, Dmitry Kiselyov, head of Sputnik's parent company, Rossiya Segodnya, announced that the outlet would be shutting down. Eight other Russians face accusations of involvement in organized criminal groups connected to cybercrime and drug trafficking. Court images showed some detainees, well, most of the detainees, with visible injuries. Russian media identified several of those arrested as IT specialists and business people. And the pictures were quite
And several
jarring.
Arrests have been ongoing in Russia, yeah, of Azerbaijani businessmen as well. So that's a developing story. And this week, Azerbaijan hosted the 17th summit of the Economic Cooperation Organization in Stepanakert. Among the attendees were Iranian President Bezhashkian, who is also expected to visit Armenia in the coming weeks. In the meantime, Iran expressed concern over the language used in a recent declaration adopted by the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. According to Iran's foreign ministry, Tehran does not support the terminology used in the Istanbul Declaration, particularly phrases that could be interpreted as territorial claims against Armenia or as threatening regional stability. The declaration includes a reference to the so-called Western Azerbaijan community. The Iranian foreign ministry emphasized that such rhetoric is not constructive and undermines efforts to establish peace and stability in the region. Also adding that the organization's documents are consensus-based in nature and do not necessarily reflect the positions of all member states.
Coming back to local news, former President Serzh Sarkisian is now facing fresh corruption charges. He's been formally accused of accepting large bribes and illegally engaging in business activities through trusted associates between 2000 and 2018 while he was holding public office. The case has been sent to Armenia's anti-corruption court. The case centers around the establishment of they're calling it a bitumen. I don't know what it's a factory that produces asphalt in 2006 by Armenian businessman Mikhail Baghdasarov and two Russian companies. Investigators allege that Sarkisian later demanded that nearly half of Baghdasarov's share be transferred to a company owned by his nephew and the son of former president Robert Kocharyan, effectively as a bribe. When the venture began to falter, in 2013, Sarkisian allegedly directed Baghdasarov to take a $14 million loan from a bank tied to his inner circle to buy out the Russian investors. The company's assets, including gas stations, an oil depot, and the asphalt plant, were then shifted to a new firm founded by Baghdasarov, which was later acquired for $40 million by a company linked to Sarkisian's son-in-law, helping secure a monopoly on fuel imports. Well, there you go. And as always, we talk about the articles that we published. And today we published the June security report by Nersis Kopali, and it's called Armenia, the 12-Day War and Strategic Ambiguity. And as we know, Armenia was in a very tough position when America got involved in bombing Iran, because Armenia has bilateral relations and good relations with both countries. So he talks about how Yerevan needs to utilize this policy of what he calls strategic ambiguity to navigate an increasingly complex and high-risk regional landscape.
We've had two columns this week, one by Olesya Vartanian and one by Sheila. And Sheila's is titled "To the One Who Refused to Hate Us," and it's this open letter to Azerbaijani activist Bahu Samadov, and she highlights the brutal cost of dissent under Azerbaijan's authoritarian regime and the moral failure of silence in the face of repression. And this is the story of our times, basically, but in this particular case, it was addressed to an Azerbaijani activist. And also we have Olesya's column. It's called Kiev Doesn't Sleep, A Dispatch from a City at War. More than 3 years into Russia's invasion, Kiev has adapted to the rhythms of war, as one does apparently. Mm-hmm. Well, resistance has faded into daily routine, yet the consequences of this conflict still ripple far beyond Ukraine, including into the South Caucasus. And it's a very, again, very personal piece because she was there when Kiev was recently being being bombed.
Well, coming back to Iran, we had it's been kind of an Iran week. We had well, not so much Iran, but also nuclear deterrence, right? So we published a piece by David Bedrosyan called India Pakistan Escalation, Nuclear Deterrence and Armenia's Defense Outlook. And what he's doing is he's showing that this escalation underscores the power and limits of nuclear deterrence, reveals shifting regional alliances that involve Turkey, Azerbaijan, and Pakistan, and highlights implications for Armenia's security, but also including the role of Indian weapons. So it's a very complex article, but a very interesting one. And then I also did a podcast. I know I'm jumping a little bit over the articles, but I think they're all related. And somebody I've been wanting to interview for a long time, Dr. Arek Danagulyan. He's a nuclear physicist, a nuclear scientist at MIT. So I sat down with him to talk about this recent escalation. We talked about Iran's nuclear weapons program. We assessed the regional security implications for Armenia. And we looked at, you know, is nuclear energy in Armenia's future? We know that in a decade, Medzamor will be decommissioned. We talked about the need for small reactors to replace aging infrastructure and challenges in developing nuclear engineering expertise, because we have problems with our education system, as we know.
And unrelated, actually, though when we published this, we didn't realize they would be related. We have a piece in our creative tech section that says, that's titled Armenia and Innovation, Time to Challenge the Stereotypes. And the author, Anit Oroyan, she just like takes a look at five narratives, five stereotypes that we keep saying. And
we're good at that.
We're good at that. One of them is like more investment means innovation. The other thing is because we had a good Soviet past in the realm of science, that means we should be good enough right now. So anyway, she really unpacks these stereotypes and shows that no, not necessary. Let's not hinge everything on those.
Exactly. And since tomorrow, July 5, is Armenia's Constitution Day, look for a piece that we will share with you tomorrow. It's called Armenia's Perpetual Search for a Fitting Constitution. And it's a real in-depth dive into Armenia's constitutional history since independence. It outlines the country's three constitutional referendums, the first one in 1995, 2005, and then 2015, and details the current process of drafting a new constitution. It seems like every administration that comes wants to change the constitution. So you could look for that tomorrow. And that's the kind of week we've had here in Armenia. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend. And we'll be back, as always, next week.